You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'll be your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yeah, this will be episode 448.
Woo!
That's right, 448 episodes, and we're not stopping just yet. We're still going.
When are we stopping?
I don't know.
When we lose our voice?
COVID could not stop us. We're still going.
You know, it's funny. I do a live stream with our friend Ellis every Thursday night. It's on Ellis's YouTube channel if anybody wants to watch it. But it's live. And last night, so I'm taking what I will call a staycation right now. Mm. It's just a couple days off. Mostly it has to do with having to burn time so that I don't get docked at the end of the year because I'm maxed out on vacation. And so I'm taking a couple days off, trying to finish up some drawing projects and do some stuff around the house. And so yesterday was Thursday, and we always record on Thursday, and I was home alone all day on Thursday. I didn't leave the house. I didn't talk to anybody. And I got to talking, and after about an hour of talking, I just got to where I couldn't talk. It's like my voice just gave out, and I was like, dude, I gotta go. I can't talk.
That's weird.
Well, you know, what's funny is that'll happen to him sometimes when him and I are hanging out because, you know, Ellis lives by himself. He doesn't talk to anybody. He doesn't work. He doesn't, you know.
I'm surprised he didn't have a cat or something.
He does have a cat.
He can talk to his cat?
I bet he does. He won't admit to it. I don't know. I have to ask him if he talks to his cat.
Talking to himself.
I think he listens. Ellis, if you talk to your cat, send us an email.
He didn't look in the mirror and talk to himself.
I don't know.
There's someone else over there.
Oh my gosh. But anyway, yeah. So yesterday I was like,
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, because of my self-imposed exile. So during my exile.
Yeah.
So to speak, or my whatever you call it, staycation, I've kind of been watching some movies and stuff. Nothing really spectacular, but one of the things I wanted to watch was I really wanted to rewatch The Matrix 4, Matrix Resurrections. I couldn't think of the name of it.
Resurrections, okay. Resurrections.
The Matrix Resurrection, which came out in 2021, 2022.
Yeah.
When The Matrix came out, I loved it. I was a big Matrix fan back in 2000. I thought it was really, really cool. I loved the idea of you kind of went in and didn't know what was going on, and you don't know what the Matrix is. That was the big thing. What is the Matrix? And so the first movie was great.
And it had Duhas in it.
I remember specifically Jeff Darrow, the comic artist, worked on it. And somebody asked him, oh, are they going to do sequels? He goes, nah, they've always said, you'll know they're broke if they do more Matrix movies. Because their idea was it was one and done. They told their story. Well, lo and behold, they came out with two sequels.
They need money.
They needed money, apparently. Well, they had made a couple movies that didn't do very well. I think they made Speed Racer, which is a great movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Speed Racer is a great movie, but it just failed at the box office.
People are idiots. That's a great movie.
Speed Racer is a great movie. We reviewed Speed Racer in the Classic Cinema podcast.
No, we didn't.
We did on this podcast, didn't we?
I think on this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, so it's probably dropped off of the feed.
Oh, a long time ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Speed Racer is a good movie. If you haven't seen it, you got to go into it knowing what you're getting into. Jupiter's whatever was terrible.
Ascending, right?
Jupiter's Ascending was terrible. And I think they did Speed Racer and they went back and did the Matrix sequels. I didn't hate the Matrix sequels, but
I thought you actually liked them.
I liked them. I kind of liked them. But the more movies they made, the less I understood The Matrix. You know, the first movie was very.
You didn't understand The Matrix in the first one either.
Well, but The Matrix was the original movie was pretty cut and dry. You know, the concepts, and then it kind of went off the rails a little bit with this whole.
Yeah, the religion thing.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's funny is
the orgy.
What's funny is We saw the Wachowskis at San Diego one year, and they were talking.
Oh, we met them. We got their autograph.
Yeah, and the people that were they did a panel. They were at the Burly Man booth with Jeff Darrow, and I think Steve Skros may have been there.
Yeah,
and people would stand up and ask them, like, "Well, you know, is the Matrix about Buddhism?" And they would go, "Oh yeah, you know, there's some elements of that in it, you know." And it's, "Oh, is it Gnosticism? Yeah, there's elements of that. Is it Hinduism? Yeah, there's elements of." And I always believed that they made it vague and mysterious so that people would think about it, but they never intended to explain it, you know. And then in the later sequels, we got the concepts where, like, the Matrix wasn't the first Matrix, and that they had, that Neo was part of the plan, and that it was going to get rebooted or something like. Then Neo went blind and he died, and you know, it really kind of went off the rails there at the end. I thought they were cool. You know, the I guess it's the third one where that fight with Agent Smith at the time, and this is pre-MCU. I was like, this is what we need to see in a comic book movie. You know, they're just like tearing each other up.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we hadn't seen anything like that in the Marvel movies. There hadn't been any Marvel movies, I don't believe, at that point. And then they did the three, and then there was this long gap, and now they come out with the fourth one. And I saw it when it first came out on HBO Max. I don't know when it came out. I know it was released in the theaters and on HBO Max at the same time, because it was the year that they did that Warner was doing that because of COVID. I don't think I saw it when it first came out, because I don't think I had HBO Max then. And when I got HBO Max, it wasn't on, and it finally came back or something. Anyway, I watched it a while back. It's been maybe like in springtime when I watched it. And I watched it, and I was like, what in the world? And I was completely lost, and I checked out. I don't know if I even watched the whole thing the first time. And then I was like, I'm not watching it. It was terrible. Anyway, so I rewatched it. I watched part of it last night and part of it today, which probably isn't the best way to watch it. Probably not the best way to ever watch a movie. I liked it better this time, but it's still like a mess of a movie. There is a lot. Again, I go back to they just threw a bunch of stuff in there.
This is December the 22nd.
Okay, that makes sense. It was a Christmas movie.
Sure. very Christmassy.
So we get a version of the Matrix where Thomas Anderson, and one of the things I think hurt the movie is they put a lot of flashbacks in it, and I know it's been 20 years since the Matrix came out, but I think that was a mistake, because every time it pulled you out of the movie. We talked about last week about She-Hulk, and we talked about how in She-Hulk she addresses the audience. And it's a very specific reason that she addresses the audience. It's kind of baked into the character. We also talked about in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where he talks to the audience. Again, it's a comedy. Both of these, it's kind of done for like comedic effect. And not that Thomas Anderson talked to the audience, but when they showed the flashbacks, to me, it really took you out of the narrative of what was going on. And I know why they did it. I mean, it's been 20 years since the original movie, and I think they were doing it to show you, like, oh, this happened. I'm, like, for example, they met the little girl that was, like, the Indian girl that was, like, a little girl. Now she was older, so then they showed flashbacks of her. And it didn't work for me. That was one element of the movie that didn't work. But we got it, and it started off. We got a Thomas Anderson that had a nervous breakdown and thought he was in the Matrix, but that was his nervous breakdown. He was actually like this game designer, and he had designed this game of the Matrix, and that was the game, and there were three parts of the game, and then they even said, everyone liked the first one, you just kept going back and making another and another. kind of an in joke about the movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's like, well, that's what we thought the people wanted, you know, and and then Trinity is in there, and it's the girl at the coffee shop that he sees, only she's married with these two, or she's got a, I guess they don't really say it's her husband, but she's got these two kids, and Neo, or...
Well, actually, he just based the girl in the game off of her.
Yeah, that's the thing, is he based the girl in the game off of her, sort of, but you get the idea that he'd never really talked to her. There's kind of this whole weird thing... And her kids apparently had played the game, and they thought it was like their mom or something. There was there was kind of this weird thing about that, and but yet you kept seeing like people from the Matrix. But I kind of liked where that was going, sort of. And but then but it went a long ways, and I was starting to think, I realized why I didn't like this movie, because there was no kung fu or guns in it. You know, well, there was a long time before that really got, you know.
You know, I wanted to like the movie so much.
Yeah.
But you know why I didn't like the movie?
Why?
One thing.
Why?
No Lawrence Fishburne.
There was no Lawrence Fishburne.
To me, he's an iconic actor.
Yeah, they just...
He's the part of the Trinity, if you want to say Trinity. You got to have him, you got to have Carrie Ann Moss, you got to have Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Those three have got to be in the movie. And to some extent, Hugo Weaving also.
Yeah.
So
I would agree with all that.
Here's the problem with the new one. When he designed the game, for the Lawrence Fishburne character, they got this younger actor to play. And I get you want to, you know, it's for the game purposes. He gets this 30-year-old looking guy. But God, how cool would it have been if they would have had Lawrence Fishburne in the movie?
And I don't know why they didn't get Lawrence Fishburne.
To me, it's a crime. It's a total crime.
Well, that really, I would agree with that. Man, that was one thing, and
because really for Agent Smith,
it could be about anybody.
It could be a different looking guy. It didn't have to be Hugo Weaving.
He's a program.
Exactly. But man, for Lawrence Fishburne's character.
Well, and here's the thing. They didn't need to have him in there. They could have... But they had a guy that was like, I'm Agent Smith. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
They should have never said, I'm Agent Smith. Could have been, it's been 20 years. I mean,
what about Morpheus, though? How do you get around that?
Well, do they need Morpheus?
Well, you probably don't even really need him in the game or in the movie, but if you put him in the movie.
Well, you know,
just DH Lawrence Fishburne.
Well, you know what's weird?
They DH people.
Well, you know what's weird is there was a statue that was him, that was Morpheus. So I still don't understand why there was a Morpheus in the movie and there was a statue in his honor. That's what I said. The movie was very disjointed.
Yeah, because really, he's part of the quote real world,
right?
Not the Matrix world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, why would there be this statue? And I mean, I don't remember. I've only watched it.
There
once.
Was a statue, and it was him and all the people that had died when what was it? Where'd they live? What was that called? Not Eden.
Nebuchadnezzar?
No. Their colony.
Yeah. It was called.
Not Eden. It was.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Anyway, wherever the
real place was. Yeah.
Yeah, the cave they lived in.
Yeah. You know, it's not happening.
Well,
in the movie
killed me. So the whole thing of it was that like the all these people were freed, I guess, by Neo. And by that whole Matrix, that revolution at the end of 3, those people were free. So all of a sudden, all the robots didn't have any power because they were getting all the power from the people.
Oh, yeah.
And so instead of, like, fighting the humans, all of a sudden there was this robot civil war going on. And that broke down into factions. But some of the robots were friends with the humans because they kind of made this pact in the Matrix 3. And, like I said, it was just a jump... And so what they should have done, in my opinion, what would have been cool with the movie would have been to go, hey, all this stuff that you dreamed about on the Matrix was really you breaking down and that Neo, or Thomas Anderson, was not Neo. He had had this mental breakdown, and
that's almost like a retcon of the whole thing, like it didn't even really happen.
Yeah, but they could. I think that would have been more interesting if they had swerved that way. But they never was able to. They never convinced you that that was the real world.
Yeah.
They should have played that, because it started off showing a reenactment of the very first scene from The Matrix.
Yeah.
That they were watching, and it's like
from the video game or whatever, right?
Well, but it was from the it was the scene where Trinity fights the cops.
Oh,
you know, and that was, it started off with that same scene, but there were other people from the real world watching it. And my thing would have been start off with the show, Thomas Anderson working at the game company, having him go to his analyst and like telling him, the guy going, "No, you keep telling me about the Matrix. What do you do? You know,
well, let me show you some."
Yeah, well, him thinking about all this. And if you want to go through the movie, go through the movie like it's, but they could, I feel like if they'd done it that way, they could have, because, you know, the thing that made The Matrix,
they could have chopped in some even more Matrix scenes in there.
Well, no, don't show any flashbacks. No flashbacks.
This was like a Tron. It was like Tron. They're like stuck in this thing.
What made the first Matrix movie so cool was when you watched it, you were like, "I don't know what's happening." And none of the other movies have replicated that feeling, because once the gag was up, the gag was up. So play this movie like it's all his delusional thing. Go that way, and then I think you roll it in the Matrix, and I think you have a stronger movie, and it's more, and it's definitely, but it almost felt like, to me, you know what it felt like to me? When The Matrix came out, it got a lot of criticism for some of the over-the-top action, the violence, and a lot of people, I don't know if you remember this or not, but after Columbine happened, where the two kids in the trench coats went in and shot up the school, The Matrix kind of got some grief, because these guys kind of dressed like, you know, in that scene where Neo goes in and shoots up the lobby of the building.
Right, yeah.
And he's wearing the trench coat, and they got, you know, and they kind of got some grief on it. And I felt like,
hey, that's too bad. You know what? People copy people all the time.
Right. I feel like the people making the movie, I don't know, making the decisions, I felt like they were trying to swerve away from that, because there was not a lot of, what made the first one cool is you didn't know what was going on. It had science fiction. It had Hong Kong style gunplay. It had Chinese martial arts. It had Wu Ping doing the martial arts. And until you, I mean, you went a long ways in the movie before it got into that. And I just feel like it could have been handled better. I felt like it was a whiff. Apparently the movie tanked. And a lot of people blame the release, how it was a simultaneous release on HBO Max. That probably did hurt it. You know, COVID hurt a lot of things. Wouldn't surprise me if it hurt that. But I feel like, it was, you know, The Matrix and even its sequels to a point were kind of their time. Things have moved on. I think they tried to make it move on, and I think that was a mistake. I think they should have rolled it back and tried to be more like the original stuff. They could have thrown in the new stuff, but it just ended up being kind of a mess.
You know, since HBO and Warner got bought out by Discovery, which, who knew Discovery had that kind of power? I had no idea.
Discovery. Yeah.
I thought Discovery was somebody else's little bitch, but apparently it's Discovery. Yeah. You know, I thought Discovery Channel was part of some other group of bullshit, but apparently they're top dog. But anyway, once that new CEO got in there, started canceling all this shit.
Zaslav or whatever.
And then he decides,
oh, dude, that guy's a badass.
He's a dick.
But, oh, you think he's a dick?
Oh, yeah. Canceled everything. Canceled? He sucks. As a fan, he's like, now, I don't own stock, so if I own stock, maybe I think differently, but as somebody who wants to see content, he's a dick. But
what's he canceled that you want to see?
Well, hang on, before I get there. You know, the previous guy, the previous regime was like, hey, this year we're going to release everything on HBO Max in the theater.
Yeah.
Well, that went away immediately when that guy took over.
Yeah, but I don't think that's happened this year.
It still went away.
I think that was going to go away anyway.
Well, it was going to go away, but... So, the Batwoman movie, Batgirl, Batwoman, whatever it is.
Did you want to see that?
I wanted to see it. I went to saw it at the theater, but I wanted to see it because Michael Keaton plays Batman. I thought that would be really cool. And also, a lot of people put good time and effort into this thing, and the fact it's getting shelved, I think that kind of sucks. If you're a creator, doesn't matter if you're a comic book artist or a painter or you're painting set dressings, you're doing backgrounds, you're doing storyboards, you're an actor, whatever, I think you want to see your efforts to be shown, whether they're good or bad. Who knows if this is going to be that bad or not.
If it's a turd, though, then he may have been doing somebody a favor.
Well, no, I think I don't think it has anything to do with the quality. I think the reason why they don't... First of all, they're getting some kind of tax break. Like, why not showing it anywhere? They're going to get, like, $90 million written off their whatever, the books. But also, they're not having to pay, like, double that for marketing, which, if they went ahead and put on HBO Max, that wouldn't be a big deal. You just put it out there, but... They want to put it in a theater, then they have to, put commercials on during high-profile shows that cost money and billboards, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But also, he's canceled a lot of, like, the animated stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that new Batman series that had Bruce Timm and Ed Brubaker hooked onto it, wasn't that canceled also?
I don't know.
I think that might have been canceled, and I really wanted to see that. So, if that's canceled... Another dick move, in my opinion. If you want to cancel other crap, that's fine, but when they start canceling stuff in the superhero realm, in the DC Comics realm, I have a problem with that. As a consumer, and I pay for HBO Max, that's the kind of crap I want to watch. I don't want to watch them do, reality programming or put, more of... Not that they don't even have it, but all their HBO back catalog, they've already got that on there anyway. What they're wanting to do is, for their shareholders, give you the least amount of quality and still charge you the $13.95 or whatever it is a month if you're not getting it for free or whatever. But to me, I want, and I've already got HBO with my DirecTV, but if I ever get rid of all that and decide if I'm going to get the app or not, just the app and just an a la carte kind of a situation, I may end up dropping HBO. I've had HBO for probably the better part of 40 years.
I was going to say 50 years.
I mean, literally, I had HBO in the bedroom at my parents' house.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've had HBO for so long, I could probably drop it and not even miss it, minus... The new content,
Game of Thrones
stuff. If they were to show the Batwoman,
can't rewatch movie, The Sopranos.
I could, but I wouldn't if I. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything I want to do with HBO, I've pretty much already done. I kind of think.
Yeah.
So to me, it's new content. Well, if they're crushing the new content I want to watch, then why the hell bother?
Well, that's true. I mean, but I don't. Who knows why the Batgirl thing got
and as
canceled.
A creator,
is Batgirl, Batwoman.
I think it's Batwoman.
Oh, sorry. Batwoman.
Well, no, take that back. It's Batgirl because the TV show is Batwoman, right?
Oh, okay.
But as a creator of someone who does comics and stuff, wouldn't you be a little perturbed if you put a year into something and all of a sudden it's not going to be out there? You got paid for it. I get it. But even your comic, what if your comic never got printed after they told you they were going to? Wouldn't that be a pisser for you?
Well, I'm working for the profit, but yeah, I mean
all those people that put time and money into this or time and effort.
Yeah,
into
but
this,
that doesn't guarantee that it gets seen. I mean, that kind of thing happens all the time.
But and I didn't care about any of the story or that, but I did want to see Michael Keaton playing an older Batman. I kind of thought that'd be kind of cool. So I'm bummed that I'm not going to see that. That's just me though.
Yeah, that is just you.
I think there's plenty of other people that feel that way.
Oh, sure, a lot of people are pissed, but they should have bought the company instead of Discovery.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like. I cannot believe Discovery's got more money than Disney or whoever. So,
well, I don't know that Disney was in the
Disney probably
was
did,
in the running.
But here's the thing. For whatever reason, it's weird for me because you would think Disney's got deep pockets. And I know they just paid a lot for Fox a couple of years back. But if in their mind, they're like, well, hey, we could own all the DC brand also.
They don't care about that.
Well, hang on.
No, they don't care about that.
I think you're wrong about that.
Why do you think I'm
because,
wrong?
Because, there's a reason why. Because they grabbed
what would they, what would they get?
They grabbed the Marvel stuff. They've grabbed the Star Wars
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, but they grabbed the Marvel stuff so they can make movies. That's all movies.
DC, same thing.
Yeah, but the DC movies aren't making that kind of the kind of money.
Because Marvel. They got the crap people involved in. They'll get the Marvel method going here.
Yeah, but I don't think that. I mean, I don't know how the deal came out. I don't know that Disney was ever in the running.
No, I don't think they were. That's kind of a head scratcher because.
They never made the offer.
If you think about all the content, though, the Warner Brothers stuff.
But you're thinking about it like Warner set out a sign and said for sale.
Yeah,
I don't think that's how it works.
But I'm guessing not. But it's weird that like didn't AT&T own them at one point?
Yeah, that's who they bought it from was AT&T.
Yeah, it's like it's weird that Discovery.
Well, AT&T jettisoned it because it was a dog because HBO was not performing like they thought it would.
Yeah.
You know, or HBO Max or whatever it was. And I think they were disappointed in the movie stuff, you know. I think you're thinking that Discovery is not making money. I think you have to think about television audiences.
I don't know who
that's probably the biggest audience of all kind of media is television.
I don't know what Discovery's got besides their shit channel on cable that I go right by. Maybe they own
you go by it, but that's like the top channel on cable, dude.
Okay. This is news to me, but okay, let's say
I'm
it is.
I'm telling you.
But what I'm wondering, though, is surely Discovery owns a lot of other things I'm unaware of. It's probably a huge...
I have no idea what they own.
It's probably a really big company, I'm oblivious to this.
Well, they used to, years ago, you know, Discovery was all like Shark Week and animal shows.
Yeah.
And they used to have the I was thinking about this when Michelle and I were traveling, because we went to the mall at one point. And, you know, they used to have those stores in the mall, the Discovery stores, and it sold, like, telescopes.
And like, and, crystals.
And, like ant farms and stuff like that. Yeah. And those are all gone now, I believe. I mean, I haven't seen one in forever. No, I don't know if they're out there.
They've probably been gone 10 years ago.
But I think it's because Discovery has pivoted away from that, and now it's more... And I think they own other cable channels.
That's what I'm wondering.
Is other cable channels. And I mean, dude, I guarantee you, some of those shows they have are some of the top-rated shows on cable, and it's all reality stuff, and it costs them nothing to make.
That's like Naked and Afraid or something, maybe on one of their
channels. That kind of stuff.
I don't know if it's
or the Street Racer show.
Okay.
I mean, that stuff does huge numbers.
Back 20 years ago, probably 10 years ago, one of my coworkers, probably about 10 years ago, maybe 15. Loved Discovery Channel, and he'd always tell me he was watching stuff about cheetahs or elephants, and I'm like, why? And he goes, I just love the animals. He ate it up. He was just eating it up. And I'm like, I didn't get it, but this guy would watch. You know me, I'm like, remember those natural, what's it called, Omaha Wild Kingdom, you know, World of Animals from Omaha Wild Kingdom or whatever. It had the guy out there.
Yeah.
He would, you know, that, when I was a kid, that was a big deal. Mutual Omaha had an animal show. And, I mean, I remember watching it. I was like, that was okay. But I'm not watching a channel all day long of them doing specials about whatever. But, you know, I know they do Shark Week. I know they've done other things that is big. But the fact they bought Warner and DC and now they're killing stuff, I'm just like, it sucks. To me, it sucks.
Well, okay, so... Here's what they own. I'm looking online. This is some of the stuff. They acquired another network. They own Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, Science Channel, TLC, They've also added the Food Network, HGTV, and the Travel Channel.
Oh, those are all big.
Those are huge. I guarantee you, between their their revenue in 2020, what do you think their revenue was?
$7 billion.
Try $10.6 billion.
Wow,
that is a lot of. They're operating.
What'd they pay for Warner Brothers? Do you know? Probably like $2 billion or something. I bet.
This doesn't say, but I mean their operating income.
Disney paid what $5 billion for. For Star Wars and $4 billion for Marvel, something like that. So for Warner Brothers,
I don't think it was $4 billion for Marvel. I thought it was like $2 billion.
Was
maybe.
It?
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe for Warner Brothers and the DC stuff and whatever else they got, maybe I don't know $2-3 billion. I don't know what it's worth.
It seems like it'd be more than that because Warner Brothers is like a movie studio.
Yeah.
Oh, they own the Oprah Winfrey Network. They're Motortran. The Magnolia Network, that's huge.
I don't even know what that is. What is Magnolia?
Oh, that's those people that do the house remodeling.
So it's a
It's worldwide.
So it's a bunch of channels I don't skip right by.
Well,
I knew it was
like though. I always tell you, just because you're not aware of it doesn't mean it's not huge.
No, I knew it was out there. Just not my thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, getting rid of. I don't know about the Bruce Timm Batman thing. As far as like the Batgirl show, I wouldn't have seen the movie. I don't really care about the character. I would have watched it if it came on HBO Max. If it came on HBO Max, I probably would have watched it.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know that I would have seen it in the theater.
No, I wouldn't have.
Don't really care about Michael Keaton as. I mean. Okay, whatever.
Oh, man.
As far as people that did the job, got paid, their word didn't get out, I mean, just having that on their, I mean, not, you know, it's like, they have that on their resume, it's not going to hurt their careers any, not for that stuff not to get out, you know. It doesn't make, I mean, most of that stuff, they probably aren't allowed to show anybody, it's not like they can... Oh, I did the background sets for this. Here's my drawings. Most of that stuff is probably NDAs anyway, so they can't show it. And they still have it on their resume. I know a lot of people are like, oh, the people that worked hard, their work deserves to be seen.
I kind of feel like that.
You know, does anybody's work deserve to be seen? I mean, what, you know.
Yeah, I think
if
so.
If the company felt it was bad enough that it shouldn't go out, it would damage the brand. They may have been getting the favor done to them, you know.
Maybe, but you know, you don't watch CW shows.
No, because CW they're shows, generally crap, aren't they?
Yeah, CW shows are like...
Well, that's what they said, is they said it felt like a CW show.
Yeah, so CW shows are, you know, it's the Warner, it's the DC stuff. They...
You know, that stuff's not on HBO Max.
That stuff is... The special effects are not very good. Some of them, it's better than Doctor Who, but it's not a lot better than Doctor Who. And if you're used to watching, like, you know, $200 million movies and you see their special effects, you're like, eh, not so great. And if it's like that quality, I get it. It's not going to put it's not really putting their best foot forward.
Right.
But then again, they could go back and redo the special effects and make them nicer. They didn't do them, though. They made it as a $90 million movie. It's not a $200 million movie. So if you want to do that, you do that. But knowing that it's not that expensive a movie, you know the quality's not going to be as good. So there you go.
Well, but here's also something else you have to think about and what people always forget about. Usually, if the movie budget was $90 million, it cost them at least that again, if not that again, and half as much to release it. For marketing, I mean,
no,
they cost them a lot of money.
That's what
put
I was
it
saying.
Out.
That's what I was saying. If the movie is not worthy of putting it to the theater, with all the billboards and
yeah, whatever
spots
they spend on
TV,
on.
You know, during a football game, the spot on the TV during the football game, then just put it on HBO Max. They could have just done that. But whatever, it's gone. It's done now.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears. I brought a book.
Okay.
And. I brought a book to the podcast or a comic I talked about that was a Bone Orchard comic that Jeff Lemire did along with Andrea Sorrentino for Free Comic Book Day. And it was just like a one shot. And he's got a new, not only an imprint, but it's a new series of books he's doing. And the imprint, I guess, is called Bone Orchard Mythos. And so, like, various books he's doing that fall under that with various creators. And one of them is Andrea Sorrentino, which I really like his work a lot. He did some work on Wolverine. He's done Gideon Falls with Lemire and some other things, along with that one shot I brought to the podcast, which is a Free Comic Book Day book. This book is called, it's the first book, it's a little hardcover. It's from Image. It's about the size of the Brubaker Phillips hardcovers they've been doing the last few years. It's called The Passageway. So it's a hardcover. I think it's got maybe 60 pages, 68 pages, something like that. Maybe actually less, maybe in the 40s. But it's colored by Dave Stewart, like I said, and the cover price on this book is $17.99. So it's horror slash supernatural. And so, like I said, it takes place in the Bone Orchard mythos. This particular story only has three characters. A fourth one if you count a dead mother. But what it is it's a story about this guy who has dreams about his mother. And his mother died while in the water. Like, him and his mother at the beach, and she was out floating in the water, and he was like a little kid. He's like building sandcastles on the beach or whatnot, and looks out there, and his mother had drowned. And she's not in real deep water, but she drowned. And then in his nightmares he has as an adult, her eyes have been picked out. And so he keeps on having these dreams. But in the story, as an adult now, he works for like an oil and gas company, I guess, not really on a drilling platform in the water, but like along the coast, there's various ones he works at for this company. And he's a geologist. And at one point, he gets sent to this rock island kind of out in the ocean that's got a lighthouse and like a building on it. And the reason why they send him out there, and I guess maybe the drilling company he works for might own it, but anyway, the reason why he goes out there is because something's been unearthed out there, and they don't know what it is, but he's the closest geologist around, so they hire this boat for him, and this captain takes and ferries him out to this island on a good-sized boat. Like, they're in open ocean. So he goes out there, and he's up against the cabin. The captain's inside the cabin driving this big boat, but he's kind of up against the cabin, kind of sitting outside, and he looks a little peaked, and the captain is talking to him through the window and says, he goes, "You look like hammered shit." And he's like, "Thanks." And he's like, "Well, you seasick?" He goes, "No." He goes, I just don't like the ocean." He's not seasick, he just don't like the ocean. And the guy's like, "Well, you work at the ocean." He goes, "Well, I work on the along the coast as a on the rigs on the coast, but not really on the water." And you don't know about his mother. His mother drowned and all that. You don't know about all that at this point. But anyway, the captain pulls up the boat at the dock, and the guy gets off, and the captain goes to shore with him to introduce him to the lady on the one lady lives and works at the lighthouse, and her name's like Sal, and I think his name is John Reed. Anyways, so the captain of the boat, the guy on the boat, kind of gives the lady on the island some grief, and she kind of gives it back. And then you find out through the story that the captain is actually her brother, the lady that lives on the lighthouse island's brother. And so the kid, this John Reed guy, he's probably in his like late 20s or something, maybe early 30s. This a lady that lives on the island's quite a bit older. She uses a cane. And then, of course, the captain of the ship is quite a bit older, too. Anyways, the captain leaves. He introduces the kid to the lady, and he ends up leaving. And the lady's like, "Oh, so you're here." And the guy's like, "Yeah, I'd like to see, well, before the daylight ends, I'd like to see what you're talking about." And so he's got all this gear off the boat. And so she starts walking across the island. It's not a very big island. It's very rocky. And she goes, "Yeah, there was two big rocks covering this, and the rocks are gone, and now this thing is here." And so when they get over there, you find that in the ground, there's this big, like a big pipe. And it's really big around. It's probably 10 feet around. So you could fall in it very easily. It's a pipe that goes down. They don't know how far down it goes. And he goes, "How deep is this?" And she's like, "I don't know. I've thrown some rocks down there. You can't hear the bottom." And so what he does is he opens up one of his cases and he gets out like a drone. And he kind of flies his drone down in it. Now my thought was, after a while you're able to see it and it's going to hit the wall or something's going to crash. But he's very comfortable driving his drone down in there. And he notices that there's like crows or ravens flying around, and they're making this caw noise, like caw, caw. And he's thinking back, and when his mother drowned, when he was on the beach playing with his toys in the sand, making sandcastles or whatever, his mother was out in the water, asked him to come in. He goes, "Yeah, I'll come out in a minute," or whatever. He's a little kid. He remembers there was like crows there too. They're flying around when his mom was out there. And then when he looked up out there, he saw his mom right off the dock, because the water they're in, there's a dock. And she's probably like maybe 30, 40 feet away from the dock. And she's laying there and probably dead. And he finds her dead or whatever. So he has these memories all the time. So that just popped into his head. And when he hears this crows or ravens above him cawing, he automatically thought about his mom. And so he kind of snaps back to reality. The lady's talking to him or whatever. And she's like, "What do you think?" And he's like, "I don't know what to think." He goes, "What about where the big rocks go?" She goes, "I don't know. Maybe they fell in." So anyways, this pipe is uncovered. He drives this drone down. And then the drone starts measuring how deep it's going. She's standing there. He's talking to her. He's standing there. And it's going down like 35 feet, 41 feet, 48 feet, 51 feet. 57 feet, still going deeper and deeper. Before he dropped the drone in, he threw like a rock down. He didn't hear the bottom. He goes, "Well, maybe it's like mossy or something down there." Oh yeah, the drone's got a camera on it also. So at one point he gets down to 60 feet and he swears he sees there's this face in the
camera. Oh, jeez.
In the camera.
You don't want to see that down there.
Yeah, it's almost like a
reminds me of the Misfits logo.
Charlie Manson. Yeah,
some kind of,
a Charles Manson looking thing or whatever, the beard and stuff. This guy's got his mouth open or whatever. But anyways, and then so all of a sudden when he sees that, he goes, "Oh, fuck." She doesn't see it on the screen, but he sees it. And then all of a sudden all these crows, like hundreds of crows, fly out of the pipe. And it freaks him out. And she's like, "Careful," because he's almost falls in or whatever. He's like, "Yeah, did you see that on the screen?" She's like, "No." And he's like, "Oh." He didn't tell her what he saw. He's just like, "Oh, I thought I saw something." And so then he has this vision of like crows, like with like eyeballs, like pecking on some eyeballs. And then he's like, "What the heck?" And he looks over there again, and it's like a crow, like pecking on something else on the rock. It's not eyeballs. She's like, "Oh, you need to go lay down. You're what's wrong with you? Maybe you need to rest." And so he's like, "Yeah, you're right." So they just leave the drone went down. They just went down. He's like, "We'll have to get that out tomorrow. Like the drone's down there." And so they go back to the lighthouse or the cabin on the lighthouse island. And she makes dinner and they eat dinner and they're kind of talking. And that's when she tells him, "Oh yeah." Well, he asks her, he goes, "Well, how long do you stay out here before you go back?" And she goes, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Do you stay out here like a month and then go back to the mainland?" And she goes, no, I live out here. This is where I live. And what's his name? He brings me supplies. And the guy's like, "Oh, you mean that guy? The guy that brought me out here? He's a real dick, isn't he?" And she's like, "Yeah, he's my brother."
Oh, no.
And he's like, "Oh, sorry." And she's like,
"Oops."
She's like, "Don't worry about it. Yeah, no." She's like, "Yeah, I've been living out here about 25 years. I never go back." He goes, "You've been living out here by yourself for like 25? She's like, "Yeah. I live out here, and he brings me supplies," And he goes, well, what are you doing? She goes, I'm managing the lighthouse. And he goes, well, shouldn't you turn it on? And she goes, it's broken.
Oh, wait, what'd she do then?
I don't know. He's like, she goes, yeah, I'm going to fix it. And he's like, okay. So you got this rock of an island that clearly a boat could hit, a ship could hit.
There's no lighthouse.
She's living out there, not fixing the damn lighthouse. So he's like, she's like, yeah, you ready for bed? And she goes, I got to bed early. He goes, yeah, I guess. And he goes, you have another bunk around here? She goes, no, you're going to sleep here. And he goes, where are you going to sleep? She goes, you sleep here in the cabin or whatever. I always sleep in the lighthouse. He goes, okay. So she leaves and he stays in this little cabin area where they're eating at and all. And he pulls out his phone and there's no signal. So he's just like, great. So he's laying there and he falls asleep and he has the same dream. He's a little kid. The crows are kind of chasing him. He finds his mom drowned. And when he turns her, he goes out there and gets her. When he turns her over, her eyes have been pecked out. And it's kind of creepy stuff. Like, at one point in the dream, he picks up her eyeballs and, he finds them. And he puts them in his own eyeballs and the blood's running down his face.
Oh, geez.
It's just, kind of creepy dreams or whatever. It's like nightmares. And then he wakes up. He's God. He wakes up. And he's, reaching for his eyes. And he's like, okay, nothing's going on. Still my eyes. He looks out the window. So he looks out, this is in the middle of the night, right? He looks out the window. He looks out there, and kind of where the hole is, the lady's out there, and she's got no clothes on, and she's looking down at the hole. And then, it's really creepy looking. And so then he's looking at her, what the hell? You know, she's a ways away, but she's looking down the hole. She's got no clothes on, lit by the moonlight, though. And then she looks up and sees him, and he darts back her. Behind him,
oh no, she saw me.
He darts behind the curtain, and he goes back in bed. And he's like, "What the hell?" You know. And so it's the next morning. He gets up, gets dressed. He's calling her name. Her name's Sally. He's calling her Sal, because she said, "Call me Sal," whatever. So he walks over to the lighthouse. He's like, "Sal," and a couple times he walks into the lighthouse. Now, in my opinion, this lighthouse is probably not owned by her. It's probably owned by
the city, or whatever
coast this is off of.
Right.
You know? Now, I have heard of decommissioned lighthouses getting sold. People buy them and fix them up or whatever. But I'm assuming this is owned by, let's say, the state of North Carolina or wherever.
Yeah.
You know, out in front of, so a big ship won't hit it or whatever. You know, usually states or whoever, maybe the U.S. government, work on these or own these lighthouses. And so he just casually walks on in, looks up, sees the stairs going up to the top, kind of looks around the bottom. And then he goes up to the top, he climbs the stairs, and he gets up there, and he sees that all the glass around the lighthouse light's been smashed.
Oh.
So.
Is that why it's not working?
So, is this thing not working, or does she bust it? Someone busted up. It's all busted.
Got vandalized.
Right? Yeah. So then he goes back down, he sees her bed. Her bed looks like something been slept in or whatever. He goes outside, and he goes, oh, there you are. And she goes, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I was just looking for you. She goes, you went to the lighthouse? And he's like, yeah, I was looking for you. She goes, you didn't have permission to go in there. And she's acting really weird about it. And then she's like, it's about time you get finished with your work here, Mr. Reed. She's like being very short with him or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, sorry, you know. And so anyways, he goes out to the hole and he's kind of looking down it. And there's a drop of rain hits him in the back of the head while he's looking down. And he's like, oh, great. About that time, she comes up behind him with her cane and she busts him right in the kneecap. He knocks him to the ground. Mm-hmm. And her cane's got this big old, metal-looking head thing on it, like a bird head or something.
Oh, yeah.
And knocks, or maybe it's a fish or something, knocks him right in the knee. And he's like, God, he falls down, right by the hole. And then he's like, what the fuck are you doing? And then before he could even, look up at her, she hits him again in the back of the head, conks him really good. And then she rolls him over, and he goes, stop. About the time he says stop, she pushes him in the hole. So he goes down. So there's a shot of him, falling. It's in the abyss. He's, falling.
Do we know how deep the hole is?
No. Well,
not at this point, we don't.
It's at least 60 feet, because that's where his drone was at when he saw the face.
Okay.
So he falls, and he has, a kind of a... I guess not a
bad, out of body experience.
not a bad landing, but not a good landing. But he kind of lands in the, he lands like a wrestler lands in the ring, kind of like flat on his back.
Bang, yeah.
With his head up. And
well,
his,
you know, they, yeah, that's the thing. They land flat on their back to absorb the blow.
Yeah, so he lands like that, absorbs the
blow.
But
there's give in the mat, too. There's probably a give in the bottom of
it. Well, I think he lands like kind of half on water, half on sand or something, because he didn't land on the rocks like the like they've been throwing down there. But sure enough, when he turns over, his head's bleeding. It's running down his face. His leg's bleeding. It might be broke. And he looks up and says, "Sal." And when he looks up, like, that's what he sees. Like, the hole is like,
oh my God.
Probably like hundreds of feet up. Like,
yeah, there's a pinhole of light in there.
Yeah, and so, like, he's just laying there, like, holding his leg, going, fuck. And then all of a sudden, all these, like, crows start flying by him, like it's almost like bats, but it's crows, like, fly by him. And he's like, no. You know, and then it's crazy how many birds fly out of this thing. And then, at one point, he kind of gets up, and he kind of trying to walk on his busted leg, blood's running down his head, and he sees this door. This door's got a light coming out of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like
well,
this.
That's where the face went.
This kind of a
door. Oh, like a not a light like it's seeping around the door, but it's like a portal or something.
Yeah, and he goes in that. Looking. He goes in that, and then he enters this like Hellboy kind of a world, with like
oh man,
with like a demonic altar kind of a thing, and then all these pillars with like these goats and worlds and all this stuff sitting on top of him. He's kind of walking through it. And he was like, is this real or is he in a dream sequence? And then he sees like faces and all this other stuff. And it's kind of creepy. Then this skeleton thing on the altar, its eyes start bleeding. And he's just like, this is impossible. And so at this point, you're like, is this like from his damage from falling? Is he just seeing this? And then, of course, this person starts walking toward him. And then you see the water's kind of looks like it's bloody. And you realize this person that's walking toward him might be like the ghost or the zombified body of like his dead mother or whatever. And he's just like, no. And then at one point he kind of turns over like he's laying in a river of blood, and like there's his toys, like his toy boat and his toy pail and his shovel from when he was a kid and his mom died. And of course there's more caw and stuff, and then he sees like this sliver of light. And he's in the water, remembers in the water, and he dives down, and the sliver of white light is below him. So he dives down, he swims through it, and when he swims through it, he comes up out of the water, and he's probably like a mile off the coast of the island. So, you know, it's dark, raining. It's daylight probably because when he fell in, but we got pushed in. But you remember it was raining, so it's like rain's coming down, storm clouds, that kind of thing. And so he swims back to the island, kind of gets up on the beach, kind of gathers himself, starts walking around. Comes up on the lady, and she's looking down the hole. And she's like looking down there, and so he tackles her. She didn't hear him coming. So then he's like, what is this? What are you doing here? And then you know, she says she's trying to fix the light. And he's like, what are you talking about? Well, then, you know, she's laying on the ground, but she grabs her cane and she kind of hits him, I think in the nuts or maybe in the leg. It's kind of hard to say what she hits him in. He's like, ah!
He fell for it again, man.
Well, they're wrestling, you know, because he knocked her down. He's kind of on top of her and like trying to figure out what's going on. Anyways, he punches her in the face and, you know, you think he's on top of her, like he's got the upper hand. You're like, okay, he's got the upper hand. He's going to get to the bottom of this. And that's about the time he gets hit in the back with an axe.
Oh, geez.
By her brother.
Oh.
And he's like, what is this? Who took her eyes? And then you hear somebody say, you did. And that's when he gets hit in the back with the axe. And he goes, don't you remember? Now you need to go back down. And so the guy who hit him with the axe is the captain of the ship. He's shown up. He's got the axe. The brother's got the axe. Hit the guy in the back. Now, you think getting hit in the back of the back with an axe would probably kill you or knock you out. And this guy's in a bad way, but the guy pulls the axe out to finish the job. But the kid kind of moves and he hits his sister right in the chest.
Oh.
And she's like, hit me.
That's like some kind of wrestling thing. Yeah, you know, like, oh, he hit his partner.
With the chair, yeah.
With the chair, yeah.
And she's like,
oh, and Hacksaw slipped through it.
She's like, Dougie, you moron, you missed. you hit me, you stupid asshole. And he's like, Sally, wait. And he kind of grabs for her, but she loses her balance. She falls in the hole. So she falls in the hole. Then for whatever reason, he goes, Sally, don't want you to go yet. Then he dives in the hole. And the kid's laying there going, what the hell? And then when he opens up his hand, he's got his toy boat in his hand from when he was a kid. And then he dives then he goes to the edge of the island. He dives in the ocean. I guess he's trying to kill himself or whatever because you don't know what, he didn't know what's going on. You don't know what's going on. He had this toy in his hand from when his mom died. And when he falls in the ocean, you see his mother come up, I guess the spirit of his mother. And she comes up and she's like smiling at him and stuff. And then it kind of cuts to like the hole again. And that's kind of it. I probably didn't do this book justice, but it's creepy as hell. It's super creepy.
What a weird story.
I know. It's super creepy. This Andre Sorrentino guy, his artwork, I think, is really sharp. I like his color, well, this Dave Stewart coloring, but I like what he does. He does these, I guess he's doing it versus Dave Stewart's doing it, but he kind of does these gray tone things with his art, and I don't know.
The art is very high contrast.
I don't know what you'd call it, actually.
Karasukio.
Don't you call it?
Yeah, because he doesn't do like hatching. He does large patches of black on stuff. Similar, but more similar to what Mignola does on Hellboy, but more realistic.
Yeah, and
kind of almost like a quasi photographic style. Photorealism, but it's high contrast.
He does stuff like this too, which
kind of kind of designy. It's like, yeah. I don't know if that's birds or I guess it's birds.
It's birds.
It's like a flock of birds, but it's also in a shape of
maybe like blood dripping off of it, sort of. I don't know what this is, but this here is very Hellboy reminiscent to me. It's not only drawn like Hellboy, but just the subject matter.
Yeah, the content is kind of.
I dug this book. I think I like what they do together. I'll probably keep picking these up, but this is an odd-ass story for sure. He feels guilt about his mother. He blames himself for his mother's death, and in here you find out that it wasn't his fault that she died, of course. He's a little kid. She had an epileptic seizure while she was in the water, is what you find out. But,
oh, geez.
But the bird's pecking her eyes out, not really explained, but then every time always remembers that. It always upsets him. Tries to kill himself, dives in the water, probably the end of him. Probably that's when he drowns and he sees his mom as he's drowning, I guess is what that is. I don't know. But
there was a kid just recently in real life that saved his mom's life. Little kid, like maybe like 10 years old. His mom was floating on one of those air mattresses.
Yeah.
And she was in a pool, in their pool, above ground pool. He was out there. He wasn't swimming, but he was out there. And she was on the raft. She had a seizure. I think she fell off the raft or the raft flipped over or something.
Mm-hmm.
He jumped in the water and pulled her out, man. Saved her life. Little kid. I mean, he was struggling getting her out, but he got her out, man.
Yeah, I mean, on a deal like that, you got to keep the head above water and make a phone call. If you can do two things like that, you know.
Yeah, make sure you don't get pulled under.
Yeah. Hey, props to the kid, man.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, I like horror stories. I know you really don't that much.
No, not really. But
you know, that's kind of more my thing than your thing.
Yeah, this is.
I do like this little hardcovers. I think these little hardcovers are
pretty. Oh sweet. Yeah, you know this art kind of reminds me sort of John Cassaday. He kind of did some stuff kind of like this. This reminds me of his art on.
Not in the X-Men.
No, what was the book that he did? That was the Authority. Authority? Not Authority. Anyway. Anyway, yeah.
It's a creepy story. I like when they do... Like I told you, that one free comic day I bought or brought to the podcast, I dug it a lot, too. I think it was actually creepier than this.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm down for this kind of stuff. Well, you got anything else? We're good?
I'll tell you about this real quick. I was considering saving it. I'm I so A few podcasts ago, I talked about when I went on vacation, I read Pigs Might Fly or Pigs May Fly or something like that. It's the Pink Floyd book. And it was, I don't know, 400 or 500 pages. I blew through that in a week trying to figure out what to read next because I've kind of been on a spell where I haven't had anything good to read.
Comics, man, what are you talking about?
So this is what I'm currently reading. I've been reading some comics, but this is the book I'm currently reading. It's by William Goldman, Adventures in the Screen Train. William Goldman, well, let me read the back blurb of the book. No one knows the writers Hollywood more intimately than William Goldman, two-time Academy Award-winning screenwriter and best-selling author of, get this, Marathon Man, Tinsel, Boys and Girls Together, and other novels. Goldman now takes you into Hollywood's inner sanctums and behind the scenes for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, All the President's Men, and other films, into the offices of Hollywood producers, the working lives of acting greats such as Redford, Oliver, Newman, and Hoffman, and into his own professional experiences and creative thought process on the crafting of screenplays. So William Goldman, I don't know if he's still alive, but he was a screenwriter, wrote a bunch of stuff, and I've been reading this, and this book is really, really good. Ellis had read it, and he told me about it. I had it on the shelf.
You had a copy of that yourself?
Yeah, I had a copy of this. Yeah. I got this book when Aladdin Books went out of business.
Are you kidding me?
I was in there, and they had a deal where you could get a like a paper grocery sack mm-hmm. and fill it with books, mm-hmm. and it was like $5 or $10.
Yeah.
And this was one of the books I stuck in there. I think that's where I got this. Now they have it as an $8.50 price on there, but this book basically it talks about before I read it I thought it was a biography, but it's not really his biography. It's just his observations on the movie industry. Now, this is written in, I think, 79 or 80. So things may have changed, but it was close enough. Back then, it was close enough to, like, the studio system that he kind of knew how some of that stuff worked. For example, he talks about some of the executives. He talks about directors, what they do, the producers, what they do. He talks about stars. And everything that he talks about, he tells stories about different things and stuff like that. Like, we were talking about earlier about the Batgirl movie getting canceled. You know, stuff gets shelved all the time in Hollywood. You know, it just depends on whether it's going to be good for the studio to release it. Then later on in this book, this is the expanded edition, because this has the full screenplay of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid in it.
He wrote that?
He wrote it, yeah, and it's in here. And the book, this is, that much of it is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So
it's half the book.
Well, it's quite a bit. Now, I think there's other scripts in here, too. Yeah. Okay, so that much of it is Butch Cassidy. There's some other scripts in here in the back, some different. But he breaks down his scripts, and he talks about what he did on them and stuff. I haven't read the whole thing. I'm on, where am I at? I'm about page 180. But I'm really enjoying it. I'll probably finish it up this weekend since I'm on a holiday, kind of. But anyway, that's what I've been reading lately. That's been my next book to read. I don't know what I'm reading after that. I'll have to figure something out pretty quick.
What's it called again?
Adventures in the Screen Trade by William Goldman.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good book. If you're interested in the movie business, I would recommend.
How tell-all is his stories?
It's not.
It's not like Hollywood.
If anything, it's not like Hollywood. But if anything gets like I would call it like salacious, he won't say the names.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But he has told some stories about, especially on the chapter about stars. He'll talk about stars, but most of it isn't like Hollywood Babylon kind of stuff. It's more like story. Like there was one story where I forget the movie. They're filming a movie, and part of it was took place like in a house by a beach or something like that. And so
Weekend at Bernie's?
No, it wasn't Weekend at Bernie's. Anyway, it was some house by the beach, and I think it was Robert Redford or some big star was in the movie. Well, it was raining, they couldn't get anything. first day didn't get anything, second day didn't, and every day cost them, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so it was, it was supposed to clear up, didn't clear up. Finally, on the second or third day, it cleared up. Well, they're like, okay, let's get started. Well, the star decided he was going to ride four-wheelers or a dune buggy down the beach. They couldn't find him. He was gone for 2 hours. By the time he made it back, it was too dark to shoot. Mm. Just stories like that. It's can't do anything because the star,
Come on, Redford.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Redford. But anyway, whoever it was, so it has, the stories are more on that lines about professional behavior and stuff, rather than gossipy stuff.
And then he took so-and-so into his trailer.
Yeah. Anyway, but it's pretty good. Like I said, and he's a screenwriter, so if you're interested, which I think is why Ellis had read the book, because he was interested in, Ellis has an interest in, he's written a couple screenplays. Nothing's been bought or anything, I don't believe, but.
Has he shopped it around?
He's put it on some kind of thing that you can put your scripts on that
really?
People can read, and critique.
Really?
I forget the deal. There's some kind of deal that he kind of got dinged for something or another that they didn't like in it, but, and I think Barry said he's read it too. It seems like a Barry kind of book.
Gotcha.
It's pretty good. It's a quick read. I mean, Anyway, I recommend it.
Well, very cool. Okay, so with that, let's do this. Let's wrap this episode up right here. As always, I'm your host, Neil Nelson. Joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Hey, come back next week for another all new episode. Check out our blog at betterthanfictionpodcast.blogspot.com, where you can go straight to that. You can listen to the episode right there on the site, through the site. And also I've got photos and pictures and that kind of thing of what we've talked about each episode.
And if you enjoyed the podcast, please take a second to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. That will help other people find the podcast and enjoy it as much as you do.
You're damn right. And with that, we'll say, hey, come back next week for another all-new episode, and we're out of here.